Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Post Acute Point of View podcast, our discussion hub for healthcare technology in the out-of-hospital space. Here, we talk about the latest news and views on trends and innovations that can impact the way post-acute care providers work. We'll also dive into how technology can make a difference in today's changing healthcare landscape for home and facility-based workers and the people they care for. Let's dive in.
Hello. This session is entitled Bridging the Gap, Tech-Powered Care Transition Strategies. We'll explore the complexities of long-term care and post-acute care coordination, where technology can act as a bridge across various stages of resident and patient care. You'll learn about obstacles in the process of coordinating care across multiple stakeholders, the role that technology plays in shaping modern care networks for both payers and providers, and strategies for sustaining growth in a competitive environment. And now I'd like to introduce today's speaker. Chris Puglisi is Director of Product Interoperability, Software as a Service at ResMed. He has spent the past decade working with post-acute technology and electronic medical records, and the past 5 years focused on interoperability, and he spearheads integration and interoperability initiatives, both internally and externally. Chris is the leadership team member for the Post-Acute Interoperability Work Group, the technical lead for the Functional Status Subgroup for the PASIO Initiative, a member of the Commonwealth Health Alliance Use Case Committee, and a member of the Commonwealth Health Alliance Specification Work. Dr. Holly Miller has been the Chief Medical Officer for Med Allies since 2009. She is an internist who has practiced medicine using several electronic health record systems and has more than 2 decades of healthcare information technology experience. Med Allies operates a direct health information service provider network, a care equality network, and one of the original Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement Qualified Health Information Networks, all in support of healthcare interoperability. Dr. Miller is a chair, co-chair, or member of many health information technology interoperability-related committees and work groups engaged in enhancing healthcare interoperability value. Allison Rainey has been head of nursing and clinical informatics for Matrix Care since May 2023. She has experience in supporting development, implementation, and the leveraging of health information technology for improved clinical and operational outcomes. She also has experience in clinical operations, quality assurance, system development, clinical data analytics, and data-driven process improvement. Brooke Vanderpool is Assistant Vice President of Patient Services for the National Healthcare Corporation. She is a registered nurse with more than 20 years of experience in post-acute and long-term care. In addition to her current role, her experience encompasses all levels of skilled nursing, including direct patient care, serving as an assistant director of nursing, and serving as a registered nurse. This is such an important topic, so without further ado, I'm going to turn things over to Chris Puglisi. Chris?
Great. Thanks, Lois. So as we lead into our panel discussion, I wanted to open with a few key topics to shape the conversation and get everyone ready for the deep dive. So first, we're going to assess just the current state of interoperability in post-acute care. All right. So post-acute technology gaps, kind of a known topic of conversation, and we'll kind of go through a little bit of why that is or why we think that might be. But generally, we know technology needs for the post-acute care segment of healthcare is underrepresented at a policy level. Right? So while there are broad sweeping measures like the Cures Act and the High Tech Act and a series of other smaller legislations between them, there is not necessarily anything that's explicitly for, or maybe more notably, anything explicitly enforced for post-acute care providers, meaning there is a wide array of technology solutions prescribed that don't always necessarily fit or apply or solve problems for post-acute care providers. Now, we do know, because of the nature of care outside of the hospital, there is a growing need for more advanced technology within the segments as they expand, as they look for cheaper care settings to move the large bottleneck of patients through. But that technology can also be hard to access due to the same kind of reasons. There's not the same incentive structures or other incentives to adopt certain technology systems than the segments of post-acute care. The result generally is a lot of our operations that we see in buildings across the country are heavily reliant on phone calls, faxes, things that rely a lot on a human to, you know, interpret or make sure that they're at the right time to pick up something off the fax tray, leading to mistakes and leading to errors and general inefficiency. And there are lots of solutions trying to close the gap and remove facts from the ecosystem or turn facts into data, as we're starting to see as well. But a lot of those are not priced for or targeted towards post-acute care providers. Now, in the last, I think, 4 or 5 years, MatrixCare has conducted the same survey, both towards sending questions both to referring providers as well as post-acute providers. And over the last 4 years, there's been a pretty dramatic shift in kind of the numbers and outlook on interoperability. Now, you know, we all know there's certain big events that happen between 2019 and 2023 that might have people looking towards exchange of information that doesn't rely on a physical handoff. But regardless, the numbers speak for themselves. Since 2019, we've seen the number go up from 60% to 99% of providers saying they would switch who they work with to an organization or provider that can interoperate effectively with their business. We also know that post-acute providers can embrace true interoperability. They would increase their odds of successfully navigating the growing systems and tools trying to serve, you know, a value-based care economy and create these lasting relationships with these different providers that they have to work with and rely on for most of their business in many cases. Now, on the other side, post-acute providers are also starting to pay attention. So compared to 2019, 98% of responding organizations said that they believe interoperability was very important to their referral sources. So a significant jump from where we were just 4 years ago. And again, probably some pretty clear reasons for that. Both PAC providers and their referral sources still have pretty significant gaps, and they have frustrations with each other. Notably, the ability to receive critical data at the right time and not have it be maybe a person dropped off at your building at the end of the day on a Friday with a printout of a face sheet, maybe a couple diagnosis codes on there. There's an ongoing gap. Regardless of the growth and understanding, the technology gap has not caught up solving these problems. I want to do a little policy spotlight. I mentioned the Cures Act a bit earlier, and I mentioned that there are no real direct post-acute, you know, rules necessarily that provide a serious value. However, some of these large policy initiatives, and TEFCA is one of the most recent. It was finalized after about 7 years of rulemaking at the end of last year, 2023. And what it is kind of a large set of rules introduced and kind of initiated by the Cures Act. And under the Cures Act, it allowed ONC, the Office of National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, to grow its rulemaking capacity and establish the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, which is better known as TEFCA. Now, 7 years later, after a significant amount of discussion, rulemaking, and considerations for what exactly a nationwide exchange framework looks like, they settled on a couple key areas. The biggest being the establishment of a certification process for QHINs, Qualified Health Information Networks. So these are entities that have been approved to broker this nationwide exchange by this federal program. Now, to date, there are 7, and there will likely be more approved over the course of this year and onwards into the future. But notably, organizations like Epic, the EHR, the Commonwealth Health Alliance, which was formerly the primary organization operating in this kind of exchange space, and then MedAllies, which will have our own Dr. Miller here to talk a little bit more about what QHIN means for their organization and for the market as a whole. Now, incentives here are significant. For anyone not familiar with some of these networks, like Commonwealth or Care Equality that preceded TEFCA and QHIN, they facilitate a base level of exchange of documentation. So the minimum that you have to contribute to the exchange if you're participating is a CCDA or one of those sort of summary documents, big documents that has a list of all the patient information on it from their most recent encounter. TEFCA follows along a similar path. Goal that TEFCA and the QHINs that it's certified is to expand the coverage, right? Expand the opportunity of these networks to more organizations where it may not have already been there. So the network itself is a general value. There is a provision called HT1 that was recently announced. HT1 includes some incentives around information blocking and patient access as it relates to participating in TEFCA. And then another kind of dynamic kind of incentivizing the use of TEFCA is not necessarily something written into law, but what we're seeing amongst HIEs and other kind of larger bodies and repositories of health information and a kind of willingness to participate in a program like this. So many HIEs are either using a QHIN or talking and messaging that they are going to be connected to a larger network in this way. Why that's important for providers in post-acute care? So as I alluded to, the predecessors of TEFCA are these entities, Commonwealth and Care Equality. They covered a lot of providers, a lot of records shared. I think the numbers they have between them is, you know, above 200 million patient records nationwide. However, there were gaps, and those gaps were largely in all the places you'd expect. You know, so lower acuity care settings, especially in post-acute care, smaller, more rural hospitals, which I know many organizations in post-acute care settings and, you know, facility locations are working with on a day-to-day basis, the only providers in town in many cases. And so the goal is to widen that net, make it more available, make this exchange capability more possible in more areas, cover those gaps that exist today. And there are big gaps, and especially, as I mentioned, in those spaces I alluded to. Now, with 99% of providers indicating a change in referral destination based on interoperability, adopting something like this, which is in large part, like its predecessors, Commonwealth and Carrier Equality, a seamless exchange. Right? There is a series of electronic handshakes that allow information to be moved back and forth. And to quick phase one, if you're trying to build a better relationship with a hospital, is adopting something along these lines that can scale to all the hospitals that you might be working with. And then with a wider program like TEFCA, you think about HIEs. And for those not familiar, a health information exchange are largely state government funded entities. Hospitals for many years have been contributing information to. Many of your organizations may also be contributing information to the HIEs based on being requested to by a hospital, by a state mandate, whatever it may be. But not all states have the mandates and not all organizations are required or have been pressured to connect to the HIEs. But that's probably going to quicken, or there may maybe opportunities to advance with an HIE that could be taken advantage of. And one thing that TEFCA can present and the participation of HIEs in the program is a single connection to an HIE without having to build it multiple times for all of your different buildings, or configure and set it up multiple times for all your different buildings. We also expect the ONC will continue to expand rulemaking around TEFCA. So in addition to those two notes I mentioned around patient access and information blocking, which generally the HD1 rule alludes to coverage for information blocking and patient access if the requesters are both participating in TEFCA. So if you think of an information blocking scenario, if your hospital is using Epic, which is one of the named QHINs, you may be covered from any information blocking in exchange with them by your participation in TEFCA should your organization take that route. On the other side of that, if you look at patient access and the app and programs that are arising to serve that kind of still growing or undetermined market, a lot of them are already connected to these networks, to a QHIN, as a means to consolidate a patient record into one place. Creates an opportunity to fulfill those requirements without having to put too much labor behind it. But we do expect more, especially looking at other covered entities, explicit purposes of use, so treatment, payment operations, patient access. Payers is a likely area that we'll see more incentives scenarios supported under TEFCA in the future. Now, I can't stop with just where we transition from hospitals and working with hospitals. I do want to make sure we call out some unique dynamics within post-acute care specifically, how the facility plays kind of an interesting role. So in post-acute care, providers have distinct problems. They're separate from other areas of healthcare. Patients often receive care for longer, continuous period of time. Multiple providers may have overlapping responsibility for one patient, and there's a much wider reliance on referrals from acute and ambulatory settings. So there's very key problems to solve here that kind of broadly cover for all settings, but lots of different cascading scenarios under each. But the inefficient process of transitioning care, whether it's from a hospital to a facility, from a facility to a lower acuity building or to home health, or the cost of labor or the high cost of coordination when you're collecting all of the services and products that might be needed to move a patient home, for example. Now, this is just an example of one of the scenarios. And as you guys can all probably assume, there's a bunch of different boxes you could swap in and out and all the arrows would still make sense. But you're getting your referrals from your referral source. In many cases, the hospitalist is still at the referral source and still writing orders, at least for the couple of days that the patient immediately transitions. There's lots of coordination going back and forth as the patient completes their more acute, maybe skilled nursing stay, and maybe it's not going well. They're moving to hospice and you're bringing in a whole other organization, whether it's within your company or not, to come and take care of the patient in addition to the folks that are already doing their rounds each day. As you can assume, lots of hands in the pot, lots of different people that need to sign things, lots of different organizations that need to be aware of changes and updates, and lots of opportunity for mistakes. And these are all things that have to be supported, but are largely supported without any kind of financial incentive or any kind of reimbursement around them. So staying on that kind of topic of post-acute care being relatively unique in its space, as you've been working in your organization and handling all these dynamics that we were just outlining, how's that shape your interoperability needs and what kind of tools that your organization has had to go out and find in order to meet these kind of growing set of demands?
It's a challenge, to say the least, Chris. As you know, we were left out of kind of federal mandate standards initially with interoperability, but we're an essential part. Post-acute care is an essential part of the healthcare system. And so it does make things a little bit more challenging. Our referral sources are typically hospitals, but not always. But those referral sources need to have confidence in where they're sending their patients and an ease of transmission of data. And so they want to see the outcomes that are happening for their patients when they come to us. It's made it a little hard to get them the outcomes, the data that they need timely. So that's kind of a struggle and something that we've been working with for a while.
And so what have you set up in your role today to try and fulfill that request, right? For the kind of what we can call a closed loop, right? They send you residents and patients and you're sending them the results.
Yes. And right now is kind of we struggle is there's so many people asking for that data. One of the states that we operate in does not have a state defined HIE that's participating. So we don't have that super safe way of transmitting that data. We do in some states that we operate in and we don't in others. So that makes it a little bit harder to get that. And when you are one provider, you may operate with multiple hospitals. And so you've got to figure out how to get them the data that they want, how the EHR and your connectivity that they want and need. And so it's difficult sometimes when it's multiple providers.
And they all probably want it a little bit differently, I would assume.
Yes, exactly, Chris. They all want it differently. They want it as soon as possible, but then there's still the obligation on us to ensure that the way that we're transmitting that data is safe and secure. And that's where having the HIE, using the HIE, really helps the process along.
Awesome. All right. So on the same line, Dr. Miller, we talked a little bit about that there about closing the loop. I think that might be a good opportunity for you to talk a little bit about 360X and then where you took that program into post-acute care.
I think that the importance with long-term post-acute care transitions is paramount. We're dealing with probably the most vulnerable patients with polypharmacy and numerous medical conditions. Getting the appropriate information to be referred to long-term post-acute care facility, them being able to review that in advance and either accept or decline the patient based on their ability to care for the patient is critical. 360X designed a closed-loop referral to long-term post-acute care, starting with referrals from acute or ambulatory to the skilled nursing facilities or rehab. With that program, which is based on existing standards, what we did was define a protocol where a request would be sent with all the patient information, and then the facility would be able to accept or decline the patient. Given that in many cases, acute facilities will send multiple requests to skilled nursing facilities, organization is able to do that 360X and then see which organizations accept the patient, find out which skilled nursing facility the patient prefers, and then confirm the transfer if the accepted organization wants to admit that patient. So 360X has really taken this to the next level in terms of technology so that we can close the loop through standardized technology prior to patients even moving out of the acute facility. So I think that's been very exciting.
Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the transition of care scenario. Allison, I recruited you, and Dr. Miller and I should say recruited you, to participate in the post-acute interoperability working group around transitions of care, which Dr. Miller and I found a common cause in as she was trying to figure out how to get the right information for that 360X program. Can you talk a little bit to us about not just the, can I communicate to the hospital, but how do I get them to communicate in the information that I'm looking for, as well as some of that initiative that you've been participating in?
So thank you, Chris. And again, I'm also very pleased to be here with this group. This is a huge topic and so timely. Right. So with the transitions of care, current state, not only is it, do we get the information that we need from a post-acute setting perspective? It's also, are we sharing the information that other groups need, like the hospital, like the primary care, whoever that might be, right? And so since we didn't have all of those policies and all of those incentives in place, I think the last information that I saw was that I think home health and post-acute providers, about 80% have adopted EHRs. And so with that, there have been huge gaps in transitions of care processing, data sharing, and standardized models with that. There's various ways that we transmit, I don't even call it transmitting, how we get information from one setting to another, right? And Chris alluded to this with the faxing and the phone calls and all of those things. And then there's other ways that we do it as well, but you can't always consistently, being on a post-acute side, know what you're going to get and when you are going to get it. So it's so important that we do the work that Dr. Miller is doing and the group and Chris are doing is so critical and timely, because we really need to identify critical elements so we don't get data overload, right? There's always that risk of getting so much that you can't consume it effectively. And then there's also that risk of not getting enough. And so these groups are coming together to really identify what is the critical pieces of information, what is valuable, and what's the appropriate way to get that from one setting to another so we can appropriately take care of the patients that we need and we get all of the information that we need timely. Because, and I know Brooke can attest to this as well, we don't, in current state too, from, and I'll talk from a SNF or even home health, the information can come across, but it's not always all of the information, or it's not the critical information. And so part of this project too is to get it to them post-acute providers comprehensively and timely. Not, we'll get some here, we'll get there, we'll have to call for more, and all of those sorts of things that go on that really delay, like Dr. Miller is talking about, delay that acceptance of the patient. And can at times, if you don't get all of the information that you need up front, you end up with a bad experience for a patient and for the providers taking care of that patient, because you are scrambling then at the time they arrive at your building or at the time you're going on site to see them in a hospice or even a home health world. You know, and so if we can work through what we're doing now using technology, using integrations, using QHENs, right? So we get all of the information to the place, the one place, and we can pull down what we need or have it transmitted to the appropriate level of care, then that's critical and definitely the right thing to be doing for our patients and for our healthcare continuum altogether.
Thanks, Allison. So it's a good time to talk about QHIN more in detail. So, you know, Dr. Miller, as representative of one of the QHINs, the formerly named QHINs, what do you think the key values for facility-based provider, you know, can achieve using grammar, the QHIN that are supported under the TEFCA program?
I find this so incredibly exciting, the finally achieving TEFCA as a framework for under which not only the QHINs, which are the network, but also the network's participants and sub-participants must sign that common agreement to which they're agreeing to behave in certain ways. And I think that's incredibly exciting. The TEFCA is designed to be the on-ramp to national interoperability. And when you think of HIEs, they are regional. You may be receiving, as a skilled nursing facility, however, a patient from across the country because the family has decided that they want the patient to be in a skilled nursing facility closer to their home. So it's really exciting that you can really achieve, once you're a participant on one of the QHINs, Qualified Health Information Networks, you can have national interoperability as long as the organization from which you're sending or receiving information is also a participant or a sub-participant on any of those QHIN network. It's truly national interoperability. We've had, you referenced Commonwealth. There's also other networks that were not under a framework, but just separately existing networks. They couldn't exchange with networks that were either that were on a different framework or did not have a framework themselves. So this whole idea of the common agreement means that you can exchange with anyone else in that ecosystem. I think that the other, you mentioned the exchange purposes, which are to be supported, being treatment, payment, healthcare operations, public health, government benefits determination, and individual access services, which means that individuals can seek their own health information. So, and we are expecting over time that those will expand, but this really will be the on-ramp to the networks of networks for which exchanges in the future will be taking place. And that's why I think it's so incredibly exciting. And I also think it's just critically important that LTPAC does not get left out of this ecosystem. They have to participate.
I'd say if there's one takeaway we want everyone to have, it's just to keep paying attention to TEFCA. If you're not going to adopt it short term, just keep waiting for the incentives to get better and adopt it later. Okay, I want to come back actually to something that Brooke said early on around incentives. So we've known for some time that the dollars that were extended in the High Tech Act back in 2009 are not really here for post-acute providers, covering, you know, all different paths of out-of-hospital care journey. So Brooke, can you speak to some of the areas where you've seen the biggest difference in how your teams have to operate versus how you kind of observe some of the hospitals, you know, in terms of your working relationship and the teams you're interacting with?
Yes, I think it's, again, the exchange of information, having things timely, accurate, and up to date. And, you know, we may be receiving the continuity of care, the physician orders for a patient in multiple forms. So it's not unusual for a patient to have discharge orders, discharge summary, an after visit summary, things like that. And so it becomes very confusing on our end to understand what really is the source of truth. That has been a huge struggle for us and requires us to reach out, to have multiple touch points with that source, that referral source, to see what is the real source of truth for our patients.
Yeah, so they all kind of have different technology implementations and ways they can get you stuff, but there's no central way for you to look at it just once rather than have, well, faxes or emails or whatever else coming in all over the place. This will be, I'll direct this at Allison first, but anyone else, please jump in after, or Brooke or Dr. Miller, please jump in afterwards. But, you know, we've seen all these sweeping legislations, like HITECH introduced EHR certification, which has all sorts of tech provisions to facilitate different kinds of exchange. The Cures Act introduced a whole host of new technology implementations and capabilities. But when we look at the transition problem and the coordination problem, those don't seem to be solved, despite kind of all these rapid advancements and leaps forward that, you know, seemingly benefit other parts of the healthcare space. So, Allison, why do you think that is? Why haven't we solved the problem with EHR certification?
Chris, I think, this is my opinion, but I do think that we have focused on, the intent is great, right? We are really trying to encourage this longitudinal care data source where we can really take care of our patients comprehensively and get all of the information that we need, and we share it appropriately. But I think sometimes we get mired in all of the checkboxes around certification and all of the parts and pieces. And sometimes we get stuck in trying to manage all of those things, and they're time consuming, right? They are not small asks of EHR providers or, you know, or others to meet those definite requirements. And in trying to manage those and really develop those areas, sometimes we're taking away from some of the broader things that really are going to impact our patients quicker and probably more effectively in the short term and in the long term, right? Going back to Dr. Miller's comments around QHINs and TEFCA and the having that broad database that can help us take care of the patient that is transferred from California to Tennessee, wherever it might be, right? And so if we really target those types of things specific to the transition of care, because we know it's broken, and TEFCA in the basic sense of care coordination across facilities from acute care to, and then also bringing all of that information, all the pertinent information, because we have a tendency to focus on transitions of care, but also in a long-term care space, there's all of those other specialists. And now, you know, we do a lot of remote patient monitoring and the wearables and the vital signs and all of those things that also contribute to better care for the patient. And if we can focus on getting that information and that interoperability from the devices and from the specialists and from the various EHRs to one place, that's a huge battle that's won. It's people are really trying to do the best by the patient. So I think that's probably a long way to say, I think there's lots of great things about the certification process, and certainly a goal would be to get a lot of those done. But I think sometimes we are focused on those checkboxes when really sometimes we miss the mark, especially from a post-acute, and what would really help the patient and what would help, again, going towards the aims is taking the best care of patients that we possibly can, having great care coordination, and providing all of that at a lower cost, right? So again, I just think that there are parts that are absolutely wonderful that really are impactful across the entire care continuum, not just limited to certain aspects of it that have just been brought in earlier, to have a tendency to focus on it just as a healthcare environment in general.
Allison, I'd like to add on to that if I may, because I think the long-term post-acute care environment is a very special environment. As you referenced, there are so many specialty areas involved that need their own data set to best monitor and take care of the patient. But whilst also it's an environment that we well know has a very high staff turnover rate. So training people on electronic health records is an ongoing process that never stops. And the other thing is that not having electronic interoperability leads to enormously increased burden on people that are required to enter that data. It leads to transcription errors that can be dangerous and cause adverse events or worse. It also leads to not really being able to perceive the overall care plan. So I think there's real risk in LTPAC being left out of interoperability. And it just, you reference how costly it is. It increases the cost because of that increased burden.
Brooke, just a quick one from something you said earlier that I think is of interest. So you referenced a couple times like source of truth, like how do we get to a source of truth and, you know, communicate near in real time? And the question coming in is, you know, how try to do that? How are you doing that? Try and create that feedback loop without maybe some of these standard implementations that, you know, Dr. Miller and Allison have been talking about?
We've kind of done it, unfortunately, the old-fashioned way, reaching out, making phone calls, talking directly with that hospital to find out, because it is different for different ones. And unfortunately, we've had to do it that way, which takes a lot of time. It adds for opportunity for error on our behalf to log that correctly. But that's what we've had to do. Luckily, we have a good relationship with our providers and brought this up to their attention, opened up a lot of dialogue, I'll say that, for us to discuss and for them to realize how we see things and us to show them how it looks on our end. And we've had some really good success stories with a lot of our referral sources in working together to kind of make that data exchange at least more clear, even though it's not exactly interoperability, but it to make it more clear. We've been lucky to be able to work together with them and talk through it. But it is a tedious process.
So maybe just to make you just elaborate on that a little bit, because that is certainly a message that everyone should have. Go and talk to your referral sources. Are you going to get like the perfect technology implementation? No, not necessarily. Will you get a dialogue going? Will you achieve things? I think the answer is yes. So would you mind, Brooke, just going in like one anecdote, got one in handy on that working with one of your partners?
Yes. No, we had a very large hospital chain that we were lucky enough to sit down with and actually show them how things were coming over to us and conflicting information. We were lucky. We were able to sit down physically and meet with them. It took time. This wasn't something that we were able to work together and make better quickly. I'm talking, this took several years where we both were open and honest and we saw it as an opportunity for improvement. The hospital provider did, and we did too, for us to really sit down and for the good of the patient, get clear, concise information. And so we would save specific examples, and they did the same thing for our patients that was for the information that was confusing to them. And it was, we had monthly meetings for months and months, and it took a lot of work on our behalf. It took a lot of work on their behalf as well to get there. And then currently, actually in another state, we have begun that process, just reaching out, you know, kind of the discharge planner is kind of your first entrance into getting to somebody in that market. So we have an area that we've been struggling in. And so we've reached out, we've started with an email, just a simple email to the discharge planners, you know, can you help us for the good of our patients and the continuity of their care, getting in and sitting down. So we're early in that process in that state. So I'll have to share more of that later.
Thank you very much. We found today's session informative. Before I sign off, I'd like to once again thank our speakers, Chris Puglisi, Dr. Holly Miller, Allison Rainey, and Brooke Vanderpool. Thank you.
That concludes the latest episode of the Post Acute Point of View podcast. We have a lot of guests and topics coming up that you won't want to miss, so be sure to subscribe. To learn more about Matrix Care and our solutions and services, visit matrixcare.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you for listening. Be well, and we'll see you next time.